National Public Radio presents a production of the Hollywood Theater of the Year, 2000X. A radio series devoted to stories of the next millennia. Now, here is your host, the award-winning writer and critic, Harlan Ellison.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to send you on now to listen with pleasure to an early, brilliant story from Canary in a Cat House, a tale of Malthusian jiggery-pokery, the most excellent Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Mr. Kurt Vonnegut, Jr.
Sometimes I get so mad, I feel like just up and diluting his anti-gerasone.
Oh, gosh, that'd be against nature, Em. That'd be murder.
Oh, against nature? Who knows what nature's like anymore?
Yeah. Besides, if he caught us tinkering with his anti-gerasone, not only would he disinherit us, he'd bust my neck. Just because he's 172 doesn't mean Gramps isn't strong as a bull.
Oh, I don't guess I could ever bring myself to dilute his anti-gerasone or anything like that. But, gosh, Lou, a body can't help thinking Gramps is never going to leave if somebody doesn't help him along a little. Golly, we're so crowded. A person can hardly turn around. And Verna's dying for a baby. And Melissa's gone 30 years without one. Oh, I get so sick of seeing his wrinkled old face, watching him take the only private room and the best chair and the best food, and getting to pick out what to watch on TV, and running everybody's life by changing his will all the time.
Well, hon, after all, Gramps is head of the family. And he can't help being wrinkled like he is, you know. He was 70 before anti-gerasone was invented. Oh, he's going to leave him. Just give him time. It's his business. I know he's tough to live with, but be patient. It wouldn't do to do anything that'd rile him. After all, we've got it better than anybody else there on the daybed.
Oh, how much longer do you think we'll get to sleep on the daybed before he picks another pet? Mm-hmm. The world's record's 2 months, isn't it?
Yeah. Mom and Pop had it that long, once, I guess.
When is he going to leave, Lou?
Well, he's talking about giving up anti-gerasone right after the 500-mile speedway race.
Yeah, before that was the Olympics, and before that the World Series, and before that the presidential elections, and before that I don't know what.
Okay.
It's just been one excuse after another for 50 years now. I don't think we're ever going to get a room to ourselves or an egg or anything.
Oh, all right, call me a failure. What can I do? I work hard and make good money, but the whole thing practically is taxed away for defense and old age pensions. And if it wasn't taxed away, where do you think we'd find a vacant room to rent? Iowa, maybe? Well, who wants to live on the outskirts of Chicago?
Lou, hon, I'm not calling you a failure. God, the Lord knows you're not. You just haven't had a chance to be anything because Gramps and the rest of his generation won't leave and let somebody else take over.
Yeah. Well, you can't exactly blame him, though, can you? I mean, I wonder how quick we'll knock off the anti-gerasone when we get Gramps' age.
Sometimes I wish there wasn't any such thing as anti-gerasone, or I wish it was made out of something real expensive and hard to get instead of mud and dandelions.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wish people just up and died regular as clockwork, without anything to say about it, instead of deciding themselves how long they're going to stay around.
Yeah.
There ought to be a law against selling this stuff to anybody over 150.
Oh, fat chance of that with all the money and votes the old people have got. Are you ready to up and die, Em?
Well, for heaven's sake, what a thing to say to your wife.
Oh, well, you...
I'm not even 100 yet. The best years of my life are still ahead of me. But you can bet that when 150 rolls around, old Em's going to pour her anti-gerasone down the sink and quit taking up room, and she'll do it smiling.
Sure, you bet. That's what they all say. How many you heard of doing it?
There was that man in Delaware.
Oh, aren't you getting kind of tired of talking about him, Em? That was 5 months ago.
Well, all right, then. Grandma Winkler, right here in the same building.
Well, she got smeared by a subway.
Oh, that's just the way she picked to go.
Oh, yeah? Then what was she doing carrying a six-pack of anti-gerasone when she got...
Oh, I don't know. All I know is Something's just got to be done. Oh, sometimes I wish they left a couple of diseases kicking around somewhere so I could get one and go to bed for a little while.
Oh, Ann.
Too many people!
Oh, hon, I hate to see you down in the dumps like this.
Oh, if we just had a car, like the folks used to in the old days, we could go for a drive and get away from people for a while. Oh, gee. If those weren't the days.
Yeah. Before they used up all the metal.
We'd hop in and pop and drive up to a filling station and say, fill her up.
Oh, that was the nuts, wasn't it? Before they used up all the gasoline.
Oh, and we'd go for a carefree ride in the country.
Yeah. All seems like a fairyland now, doesn't it? Doesn't it, Em? Hard to believe there really used to be all that space between cities.
Oh, yeah. And when we got hungry, we'd find ourselves a restaurant and walk in big as you please and say, I'll have a steak and French fries, I believe. Or how are your pork chops today?
Oh, yeah, man. Hey, how'd you like a hamburger with the works, Em?
Oh.
If anybody offered us processed seaweed in those days, we would have spit right in his eye.
Right, or processed sawdust.
Okay. Well, anyway, they've got this stuff so it tastes a lot less like seaweed and sawdust than it did at first. And they say it's actually better for us than what we used to eat.
I felt fine.
I know. Well, listen, you've got to realize the world wouldn't be able to support 12 billion people if it wasn't for processed seaweed and sawdust. I mean, think about it. It's a wonderful thing, really, I guess. I mean, well, that's what they say.
They say the first thing that pops into their heads. Oh, golly. Remember shopping, Lou? Remember how the stores used to fight to get our folks to buy something? You didn't have to wait for somebody to die to get a bed or chairs or a stove or anything like that. You just went in, bing, and bought whatever you wanted. Gee whiz, that was nice. Before they used up all the raw materials.
Yeah,
I was just a little kid then, but oh, I can remember it so plain.
Hey, remember when we used to be bugs on science fiction, Em? Flight 17, leaving for Mars. Launching ramp 12, board. All non-technical personnel kindly remain in bunkers. 10 seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mayday!
Oh, I won't worry about what was that going on Earth. In another 5 years, we'll all be shooting through space to start life all over again on a new planet.
Yeah, only it turns out you need something about twice the size of the Empire State Building to get one lousy colonist to Mars. And for another couple of trillion bucks, he could take his wife and dog. That's the way to lick overpopulation. Emigrate. Jeez.
Lou? When's the 500-mile speedway race?
Memorial Day, May 30th.
Was that awful of me to ask?
Oh, not very, I guess. Everybody in the apartments looked it up to make sure.
No, I don't want to be awful, but you just have to talk over these things now and then and get them out of your system.
Well, sure you do. You feel better?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not going to lose my temper anymore, and I'm going to be just as nice to him as I know how.
Oh, that's my M.
Let's go in, Lou.
Okay.
A magnitude 50 earthquake rocked Mexico City today.
You see a seat anywhere, Lou?
Way in the back. Come on.
Rescuers continue to dig through the rubble.
Hell, we did that 100 years ago.
Meanwhile, Council...
Oh, wait. Don't step on Cousin Edith.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, Dad.
Could you hunch forward a little, son?
Continue to dig in an effort to save Albert Hagedorn, 183, who has been wedged for 2 days in an accordion-like position.
I wish you'd get something more cheerful.
Silence! Next one shoots off his big bazoo while the TV's on, he's gonna find himself cut off without a dollar. When they wave, the checkered flag at the Indianapolis Speedway, and old Gramps gets ready for the big trip up yonder.
Dr. Brainerd Tease Bullard, president of Wyandotte College, said in an address tonight that most of the world's ills can be traced to the fact that man's knowledge of himself has not kept pace with his knowledge of the physical world.
Hell, we said that 100 years ago.
In Chicago tonight, a special celebration is taking place in the Chicago Lying-In Hospital. The guest of honor is Lowell W. Hitz, age zero. Hitz, born this morning, is the 25 millionth child to be born in the hospital.
Oh, we've said that 100 years ago.
I heard that.
Huh?
You there, boy!
I didn't mean anything by it, sir.
Get me my will. You know where it is. You kids all know where it is. Fetch, boy!
Oh, gosh darn it. This is the 11th time he's disinherited me. Em and I'll have to vacate the daybed and sleep on the floor in the hall. It's going to take me 6 months at least to get back in Gramps' good graces. Darn it. Where's that thing? Oh, yeah. Unmistakable. Dog-eared, perforated, blotched. A 50-year diary jammed into two sheets. A garbled, illegible log of day after day of strife.
Boy!
Oh, Cal. Coming, sir. Oh, sorry, Mortar. Here's your will, Gramps.
Let me see now. Pen!
Here, Gramps.
No, not that leaky thing. Here. Ah, here's a nice one. Good boy, Willie. I, Harold D. Schwartz, residing in building 257 of Alden Village, New York City, do hereby make, publish, and declare this to be my last will and testament, hereby revoking any and all former wills and codicils by me at any time heretofore made. Is there an eraser on this thing? No. Yeah. Yeah. I have had many heartbreaks. Here, leaving this vale of tears for a better land, the deepest hurt of all has been dealt me by
Lou Pop.
Lou Pop?
No, he means me, Gramps.
Yes, yes, yes. By my great-grandson, Louis J. Schwartz. For his disrespect, I hereby...
Grandson, sir.
What?
I'm your grandson, not great-grandson.
Don't quibble. You're in deep enough now, young man. There. My grandson, Louis J., etc., etc., for his disrespect and quibbling, I hereby revoke any entitlement of blood and / or kinship that he may have to any portion, segment, or element of my estate and / or property in whole or in part. Now, where's that? Oh, here it is. My deluxe apartment on the 76th floor of building 257 Alden Village, New York. New York. And, in particular, my double bed and private bedroom I do hereby bequeath to... My son, Willie F. Schwartz.
Oh, just there.
Oh, well, time to watch the McGarvey family. I haven't missed an episode of this show for nigh on 112 years. Can't wait to see what happens next.
And now, Anti-Gerasone presents the 29th...
I guess I'll go lie down a moment.
...22nd chapter in the life of your neighbors and mine...
Our new space next to the bathroom door. Oh, jeez. Oh, well. Anywhere you hang your head is home. Ow! Folks ought to be more careful when they go to the John. What is that? Wait a minute. Em, is that you in there? Listen, you aren't doing anything foolish with Gramps' bottle of anti-gerasone, are you, Em? Em? Morty? Oh, my gosh. Morty's emptied Gramps' anti-gerasone is filling it up with water. Morty, hey, Morty, come back here. Morty! Oh, now what? I can't just let this go by. But golly, I can't tell on Morty either. I mean, who could blame the kid? What with his new bride and all. Besides, Gramps would make life around here a living heck. It's bad enough as it is. Okay, only one thing to do.
Where's that bottle? All's I gotta do is refill Gramps' bottle with a little from mine and Em's and Willie's and Nadine's.
Thus ends and then 29,121st chapter in the life of your neighbors and mine, the McGonagall.
Oh, shucks. Show's over. I gotta hurry. Oh, just a minute.
Hurry up in there. There's a line out here.
Uh-oh. Oh, no. Oh, gosh.
Well, well, well. Looks like you got some cleaning up to do, boy.
Morning, hon.
Morning, Lou.
Morning, son.
Not ever.
Morning, everybody. Pass the processed sawdust cakes, would you, Em?
Here. Seaweed syrup?
Yeah, thanks. Has Gramps come out of his room yet?
Oh, not a sign of him since yesterday when he caught you in the... Oh, you poor lamb. Please don't look so awful. It was my fault. I put you up to it.
No, really, you didn't. Honest, Em. I was just...
No, you don't have to explain anything to me, hon. I'm on your side no matter what. It wouldn't have been murder, hon. It wouldn't have killed him. It wasn't such a terrible thing to do. It just would have fixed him up so he'd be able to go any time God decided he wanted him.
What's going to happen next, Em? What's he going to do?
Well, I'm not going to get all panicky until I'm sure there's something to be panicky about.
Maybe he doesn't know what it is I busted.
Probably thinks it was your watch, Crystal.
Why?
Don't be sarcastic with your father, and don't talk with your mouth full, either.
I'd like to see anybody take a mouthful of this stuff and not say something.
Eddie!
Oh, for crying out loud, Mom. You treat me like a little kid. I'm 73 gosh darn years old.
You talk respectful to your mother, young man.
Oh, yeah? How much respect did you show great-grandpa yesterday, huh?
Never you mind.
Oh, by the way... Isn't it time to serve the old geezer his breakfast in bed?
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it?
And as the most recent family member to get disinherited, Pop, I guess that pleasant task falls to you.
Let's have the tray, Em.
Oh, here it is. Real bacon and real eggs. We'll both go.
Well, look, Em. Everybody's gathered around Gramps' door.
Oh, dignity, Lou. Dignity. Gramps, breakfast is ready. Gramps?
Oh, look. There's no one here.
Where'd he go?
He's gone, Em.
Wait. There's a note on the bed.
Oh, wait a second. Here. Listen. Somebody... who I have sheltered and protected and taught the best I know how all these years, last night turned on me like a mad dog and diluted my anti-gerasone, or tried to. I am no longer a young man. I can no longer bear the crushing burden of life as I once could. So, after last night's bitter experience, I say goodbye. The cares of the world will soon drop away like a cloak of thorns. Come on. And I shall know peace. By the time you find this, I will be gone.
Oh, no.
Gosh. He didn't even get to see how the 500-mile speedway was going to come out.
Yeah. Or the World Series.
Or whether Mrs. McGarvey got her eyesight back.
Wait a second. There's more. I, Harold D. Schwartz, do hereby make publish and declare this to be my last will and testament. Hereby revoking any and all former will and codicils by me at any time heretofore made.
Oh, no, not another one.
Listen, I do stipulate that all my property of whatever kind and nature not be divided, but do devise and bequeath it to be held in common by my issue without regards for generation equally share and share alike.
Issue?
It means we all own the whole damn shooting match.
Yeah.
Oh, like that?
Yeah. This is...
It's just like the old system where the oldest people,
namely you,
had things with their headquarters in here.
I like that. Lou owns as much of it as you do, and I say it ought to be the oldest one who's still working. You can snooze around here all day waiting for your pension check, and poor Lou stumbles in here after work, all tuckered out.
Hey,
and
wait a minute. How about letting somebody who's never had any privacy get a little crack at it? Hell, you old people had plenty of privacy back when you were kids. I was born and raised in the middle of the goddamn barracks in the hall. Now, how about
Sure. You've all had it pretty tough, and my heart bleeds for you. But try honeymooning in the hall for a real kiss.
Oh,
come on.
The next person who opens his mouth spends the next 6 months by the bathroom. Now, clear out of my room. I want to thank... Who threw that?
Yes, Lou?
You got a wash basin all your own, too?
Sure. Wash basin, bed, light. I mean, the works. And we thought Gramps' room was something. How long has this been going on? No, it's the first time in 40 years, hon, I haven't got the shakes.
Cross your fingers. The lawyer's going to try to get us a year.
Gee, I wonder what kind of wires you'd have to pull to get solitary.
All right. Well, use pipe down, or I'll toss the whole kit and caboodle of you right out. And first one who lets on how good jail is to anybody outside ain't never getting back in. Now, quiet, so's I can hear the TV. The McGarveys is coming on.
And now, friends, I have a special message from the makers of Anti-Gerasone. A message for all you folks over 150. Are you hampered socially by wrinkles, by stiffness of joints and discoloration or loss of hair, all because these things came upon you before Anti-Gerasone was developed? Well, if you are, you need no longer suffer, need no longer feel different and out of things. After years of research, medical science has now developed Super Anti-Gerasone. In weeks, yes, weeks, you can look, feel, and act as young as your great-great-grandchildren. Wouldn't you pay $5,000 to be indistinguishable from everybody else? Well, you don't have to. The average cost of regaining all the sparkle and attractiveness of youth is less than $50. Right now, for your free trial carton, just put your name and address on a dollar postcard and mail it to Super Box 500.
Wait, just a minute. I want to get this information.
2008-1955-34.
Got it. Hello, you still there? Good. What? Oh, yeah. Yeah, regular riot in the place. They were all carted off to jail, except, of course, the ones who landed in the hospital. I saw the cop cars and ambulances pulling up from the bar across the street.
Mr. Schwartz, sir.
Yeah, hold on a minute. I'll be right back. What is it, Felicia, my dear?
I've swept all the broken stuff and cleaned up the place, Mr. Schwartz. Anything else you need before I go?
Yes, my dear. Could you please move the daybed in front of the TV set for me, like a good girl?
Sure, Mr. Schwartz.
Hello, gentlemen. Where was I? Oh, yeah, jail. They're all locked up. You're the best attorney on the Eastern Seaboard, and I want you to keep them there. How long? Life without hope of parole. Yes. Well, longest sentence you can get for them, then. Yeah, money's no object. Unnecessary. I have complete confidence in you. Just send them up the river and send the bill to me. Thanks. And you have a nice day, too.
I've moved the daybed for you, Mr. Schwartz, and put on some fresh linen and two of your new scented pillows. Is it okay for me to go now?
Yeah, just a second, my dear. That's for you. Yes, indeed, Felicia. Thank you very much, my dear.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartz. This is very generous.
Not at all, not at all. You have a nice day now.
Yes, sir, Mr. Schwartz. And you all have a great life.
Thank you, my dear. I'm just getting started on one.
This offer is limited and certain restrictions may apply.
And now, Super Anti-Gerasone presents the 29,122nd chapter in the life of your neighbors and mine, the McGarveys.
You have been listening to Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, based on a story by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. The story was dramatized for audio, produced and directed by Yuri Rasovsky. And in the cast, Tom Poston starring as Lou, Marion Mercer starring as M, and Hamilton Camp as Gramps. Also heard in the cast, Phil Proctor, Laura Kellogg, and Ira Burton. Warren Dewey was the engineer.
In a moment, the Hollywood Theater of the Ear will return with a mystical adventure from Australian writer Terry Dowling. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
And this is KQED Public Radio. Local underwriting is provided by European Sleepworks, backed by scientific studies on the causes of sleep disruption. European Sleepworks has designed a mattress to address those problems. More information is on the web at sleepworks.com. And by Stanford Hospital. For generations, Stanford Hospital has been committed to discovery, diagnosis, and treatment of heart disease. Stanford Heart Care to Trust on the web at heart.stanfordhospital.com.
I want everyone to look around them right now. If you're driving, pull over just for a second. Now, everybody, please just take a moment to look behind the couch or under the table or crane your neck over to get a look into the backseat of the car. Is Enron's Kenneth Lay hiding there? If he is, please tell him he's wanted in Washington. I'm Peter Sagal. You're summoned to appear in front of your radios this weekend for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
We'll have Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me in about 31 and one-half minutes at 10 o'clock here on KQED Radio.
When we think of international science fiction, we think, of course, of the adaptations from the French. We think of all the great British science fiction writers. But in the last 20 years, there has been an enormous explosion from down under, from Australia and New Zealand. It is a tsunami of talent. At the very forefront is a man named Terry Dowling. Terry Dowling's work is peculiar. It is unique. To use the Latin, it is a rara avis, a strange bird. Which leads us, exactly and precisely, to our offering now, the only bird in her name.
That summer, there were 14 of them hunting the Forgetti. 14 hard men with fierce eyes, minds like traps and no compassion.
This is the last hunt, Beth.
Sam, my editor.
In less than a week, the new law goes into effect, protecting the species. So the most ruthless, die-hard rogues will be out there. I want you to cover the story for Caravanser. You up for it?
Was I up for it? The bounty hunters met at the astronomer's bar of the Gaza Hotel on Twilight Beach. I passed them on my way to the hotel terrace. I was seeking out the Bird Club, a group sworn to thwart the hunters on this their last quest for the elusive Forgetti. and especially their field agent, Tom Tyson, known as Tom Rhinoceros. Which one of you is Captain Tyson?
That'd be me, miss.
I'm from Caravanserai. My editor called...
Oh, sure. You're the reporter, eh? Beth Leosa Tajian. I've read your stuff. You're good. Let me introduce you to the club. Mates, this is Beth Leosa Tajian. She's documenting the hunt for Caravanserai. Miss,
Beth, please.
Yeah, right you are. And you can call me Tom. Beth, this is Graham Fowler. He's our president. Nathan Hawkless, John Wren, Joanne Henderson, Aubrey Quayle, Sally Nightingale, Jeremy Eagleton, and Anton Ankel.
Oh, the geneticist.
Yeah, that's right. Old Anton's a new member. Bred a brand new species just to get in, he did.
Oh, how did you qualify, Tom?
Hey, my position's just honorary. They allow me the dodo.
But there's no dodo in Australia. Oh, I see.
Well, you got to give us a little joke now, miss.
I swear to get even.
Now, let's go find a quiet corner, shall we?
Oh, this is a great opportunity for me. I appreciate your letting me tag along.
Well, it's you providing the favor. We asked Sam for a volunteer, didn't we? Public should have all the sordid details of this bloody so-called sport. You know that there'll be considerable danger giving it to them. Did you bring your camera?
Of course.
Yeah, always keep it ready about you. You never know.
Ah, well, if it ain't Tom Tyson of the good ship Rhinoceros.
Who's that?
Misla, an African hunter.
Ah, yes, a deadly man.
Oh, they're all deadly men.
Hello, Captain Tom. You're so far from your sand ship. All because of us, maybe? You will stop us, do you think?
If I can, Misla. If it comes to that.
We are 14 this time.
All Africans like you.
Ah, who's the bird?
I'm Beth Leosa Tojayan.
She's a journalist, working the hunt for Caravanserai.
Ah, do tell.
I know who you are, Misla. You've led most of these hunts near single-handedly wiping out the Forgetti out of existence.
Only one of the man-eaters left.
That's not certain.
And we are going to get him on this trek.
Captain Tyson may have something to say about that.
Tom? Tom Rhinoceros? Let him say whatever he likes.
He stopped you before.
Yeah, twice. Only twice. Spoiled... Two hunts out of how many?
You only have 2 days this time, Misla. Then the new protective law kicks in and the Abos won't permit you to use any high-tech weapons on their land.
Merely makes things a mite more sporting.
A little less like slaughter.
A mite more sporting, as I said, miss. And then the bird club will be there. Oh, I forgot. The tribe's only let them send one man in, Captain Tom. That is, what, 14 against 2? Or sounds like maybe against 3, as the lady sounds terribly partisan for an impartial observer.
I report what I see. I've seen you hunt, and it looks like butchery to me.
Oh, there you go, eh, Tom? Shows you that women don't belong on a hunt.
I agree with her.
Which only proves my point.
It may be a woman you're hunting, for all you know.
A female, not a woman. Forgetties aren't human, you know.
You sure?
Even if it were human, would that stop you?
Not if we could get a license at the front end and a purse at the back end. Remember that old story? The most dangerous game?
Ah, then wasn't the hunter in that story defeated?
Ultimately. But he didn't have a monetary incentive like we do. He was rich and soft, and a dilettante. Remember that before you go poking your nose where it don't belong.
I intend to be careful.
You too, miss. The outback is a tricky place, and the hunt is no event for a bleeding-heart city bird.
Well, the next time I see one, I'll tell her. We left Misla and walked down the promenade. I felt a definite thrill of excitement, but also of concern and uncertainty. To be alone with the legendary Tom Tyson. These hunters, will they know more than you do, Tom, about the Forgetti, I mean?
Possibly, Beth, but not likely. They'll know kill sites and hunt patterns from all the past hunts. And they'll have a profile on how this present creature will behave. I have much the same information.
What do you know?
This particular specimen conforms to the Bale standard. We know it's a true shape changer, though a comparatively slow one. That, like all Forgettis, it mimics only humans as the most fitting mask for its intelligence. We know it's definitely not a man-eater, contrary to what Misla says. That it doesn't even kill when it's cornered. We know its bite causes a loss of memory.
Short-term memory or all memory?
Recent memory. And it's not immune to its own bite.
I've heard, too, that the Abos called it the philosopher beast.
Yes, the Aurelius. That's the bird club's doing. A deliberate tactic to upgrade the creature's status. It's also a way of describing how the Abbas have finally started to see the creature. Andromorph Aurelius, the philosopher beast. The beast of Lethe or Forgetti.
What use is a creature that can make itself look human and erase memory? Is it just a highly specialized mutation?
You think it's human, don't you, Beth?
Of course I do. Calling it an andromorph simply conceals the fact that it's another tangential. I think we've accelerated a subtype.
A failed tribal genetic experiment?
Not even failed, but... You're testing me. The Bird Club already considers it viable and worthy of protection, and you aren't convinced that I'm not working with Misla, are you? That our little mutual hatred exchange a few minutes ago wasn't just an act. That's why we're out here. You do what you need to, Tom. But you do believe it's viable, with a very real place in the natural order. That's where you base your whole defense, isn't it?
I know you're not with Misla.
Thank you. What made you so sure of me?
There's a bird in your name.
A what?
A bird.
In my name?
Most definitely.
What bird? Where?
You really don't know.
This is a joke, like that dodo business.
There really is a bird in your name.
Are you going to tell me or not?
It's getting late. It'll be a long day tomorrow. I'm turning in. And I suggest you do the same.
To the north of Twilight Beach are the restoration towns, strung out like beads on a necklace along the coast. Tyler rows on long, low beach terraces above the ocean. 100 white buildings, just about narrow streets and many small squares. We disembarked at the quay and found accommodation at the only Outlander hotel in town.
What the hell do you mean?
This is a very solemn festival.
What's the trouble, Misla?
The Abbo here says they've got some kind of religious celebration going on. Well, I don't see no signs, I wonder you.
There are not any signs. This is how we observe this day. We, the believing Thailands, go about our business as usual.
I see, but we can't, is that it?
What kind of holiday is this?
It is a very sacred Thailand holy day called the Festival of the Outsider. No outlander is permitted to enter or leave this city or to be seen out of doors after sunset. And no one, native or otherwise, is allowed to enter or leave the city upon pain of death.
Bloody hell.
Unless you wish to leave by tomorrow's ship, you are very welcome to go back to Twilight Beach and stay there.
Right, lads, here's what we're going to do. Festival or no bloody festival?
Beth, right. You got your camera handy?
Right here.
Yeah, turn it on. Let Misla see we're recording this.
Hey, now you put that damn thing away, miss.
Can't. It's my job.
Right, lads, it looks as though we have got some time to kill.
We have reservations. Beth Louisa Tajian and Tom Tyson from Bird Club.
Please sign the register. Here are your keys. Adjoining rooms as requested. And this letter came for you.
Ah, ta. Beth, we still got an hour or so of daylight left. Let's take a stroll.
We left our bags with the desk clerk and went out to walk in the streets.
I'm sure that Misla figures that I'll have some contact with the Forgetti. He might have some spying equipment shielded against discovery. That's why I wanted us to leave the hotel.
You think the letter's from the Forgetti?
No doubt in my mind.
And you think Misla knows about it?
He was sitting for all to see in that pigeonhole behind the desk. The only envelope there.
Why didn't he just grab it when he had the chance?
Your camera, that's why. He needs his public image unsullied for a while longer.
So, what does the beast say?
Well, let's find out. Captain Tom, thank you for coming. Thank the Bird Club. For this service to me, I shall never take your face or that of those you love.
What do you suppose he means by that?
I suppose he's promising never to use his shape-shifting power to impersonate me or my nearest and dearest.
Mm. What else does he say?
Well, I should be direct and honest in our dealings. The hunters will guess I am among the Choltunes at the stone door. Help me if you can, but do not risk your life. That is all I ask.
That's it?
That's it.
Hmm. Not much help, is it?
Well, at least we know now where the Umphalos is. Every little restoration town has these Choltunes, cisterns, just beyond the city limits for catching rainwater. But you know that already, don't you?
Of course. But why did you ask me in that odd tone of voice?
As the priests announce the onset of the festival. I think we'd better head back.
We were glad to get back to the hotel. I watched Tom burn the letter in the small votive fire before the Thailan icon near the window of his room.
Misla has maps. He already knows the Umphalos is near freshwater, so that means the Choltiums on the outskirts of town. Searching there is his most obvious course. The letter confirms it.
Can he be sure that the beast is there?
He's stuck out there by stone door until the festival's over. The Thailands take their holy days seriously. Security at the perimeter must be pretty tight.
Misla will move at sunset.
The instant the festival ends.
I'm going to follow the hunt. All of it.
I want you there, Beth. I'll have to assume the Forgetti will not do anything. It may just wait to die. If high tech is used, I'll especially need a witness and media contact. What worries me is that you...
If they try to kill me, can I fight? Or will that invite tribal payback?
The moment a weapon is raised in your direction, you can fight. Let's hope the weapons they use make it possible. But the important thing is, Beth, is to get the facts out so this becomes an unforgotten incident. Are you trained?
To fight? I'm a writer, Tom. I've had house training, that's all.
No, it won't come to that. Misla will keep to the rules.
Your words are reassuring, but your eyes show concern.
My eyes?
Your eyes are everything. Did you know that, Tom?
Why? Did they give me away?
They did just now. Well, we need two rooms tonight, Captain Dodo.
Hey.
You heard me. Well, we need two rooms.
Not if I were choosing.
Nor I.
This hotel maintains perfect security.
And then how come my man is dead?
What's going on in here?
A murder. That's what's going on.
Impossible.
Can you explain to me then how this body got a hole in its head?
Tom, what happened?
Get your camera. Seems one of the hunters died unnaturally last night.
He was murdered. Shot in the head while riding a letter home to his family. Now you can tell that to your readers.
The Forgetti?
We'll see. Let me examine the corpse.
One of my best men he was.
Oh, I need to get a good shot of this.
Oh, you're quite the little pest with that camera, aren't you?
If anyone came in or out, our surveillance systems would have alerted us. He must have taken his own life.
These damned abos have the whole town closed off. Security all over the place, keeping us virtual prisoners in this hotel, but they let a frigging Forgetti slip in here and murder us in our sleep.
While the sun is up, you can leave the hotel. I hope you do. And take your suicide with you.
He was killed, I tell you.
From the look of things, you're both right. He was killed, but as a result of his own actions.
What the hell are you talking about?
And it wasn't the Forgetti's work either.
Damn it, Captain. You shut up and talk.
Yes, yes, I know what you mean. I know what
no,
you mean, Misla. Calm down. Come here. Look at the wound. Get this on camera, Beth, if you will. This man wasn't shot. Shards of flesh, bone and tissue splay outward like an exit wound. And when you move his head here, you can find the entrance wound. What do you see?
I can't see nothing.
Now, take a look at this little thing on the writing table. Who's got some tweezers?
I have a hairpin.
Yeah, that'll do.
Here.
Let me just pull it out of this mess here so you can get a better look at it. I hope nobody here is squeamish. There! What's it look like to you?
How am I supposed to know what it is?
Oh, it looks like one of those small implant casings, the kind they use for surgical microprocessing.
Nonsense, rubbish.
That's what it looks like to me. The kind of casing used for brainwave satellite scanning, coated with a shielding chemical to protect against detection. You can smell it. This man had a microchip implant. By the burns, I'd say it exploded in his head.
How? Why?
You know about this, Misla.
What? What am I supposed to have known about?
No high tech. It's against all code regulations. In other words, your friend here got what he asked for. My guess is that your friend here illegally used his implant to access one of the Japanese Comsat satellites. With the satellite, he could scan the Thailand periphery for signs of the Forgetti.
Will you get that filthy hairpin out of the man's head, please, Captain? That is so disgusting.
Yes, sir. I think this little thing looks like a fragment of a chip. An analysis will prove me right or wrong. Yeah, I'll just wrap it in this tissue. There are no police here. I'll have the bird club look at it.
How did he die?
If he were messing with the satellite, which he no doubt was, the locals would have picked up the signals with their monitors. They would have used their own technology to home in on the hunter's device. Give him a dose of tribal payback.
But what are you looking at me for? I didn't know anything about this.
I'm sure.
You want your hairpin back?
I'll get a new one and put it on your bill.
Hey, excuse me. Where are you going? You're not getting the police involved in this, are you?
You don't seem particularly concerned about this, Tom.
Well, what do you expect, Beth? Of course, laws will be broken. This is the last hunt, the final chance. What matters most now is that Meisler has been caught out on a breach of the rules.
Does it help? He'll try to suppress that story.
Only for the authorities and national officials. After this, the Abbos will be far more willing to tolerate payback from me to restore balance. I need to get a letter to Graham Fowler on today's ship. It's a risk, but the Bird Club may decide it can show its teeth.
Archaeopteryx.
I'm sorry?
The Bird Club will show its teeth. Prehistoric bird. Teeth. Ah, forget it.
Oh, I'm slow.
Mm-hmm.
Archaeopteryx. Of course. The dawn bird. I won't underestimate you again.
The rest of the day went quietly for all of us. Some of Meisler's hunters roamed the streets. Others went as far as the road leading out into the hills, but no further. Thailand priests in dark ceremonial robes stood there, barring their way. Their ceremonial wands were barely disguised laser batons. But at sunset, when the streets of Tyler were deep in shadow and the temple gong was sounding out the end of the festival, Meisler and his band set off. Two lines, moving along the one narrow road that led to the Chultums. Unlike a Forgetti's town room, where it lives as a tangential human, the Umphalos is the meditation place that gives the philosopher beast its name.
This is it.
Are you certain? It's small.
Only one opening and one approach. That's good for us. Be easier to defend.
Do you think the beast is inside?
I'm going in to find out.
Oh, no, you are not.
Meisler.
Yeah, interesting dilemma, Captain Tom. You dare not show us which Chultun hides the beast, yet you cannot stay away. Sir, do not be so hard on yourself, Captain. There were clear tracks that would have led us here if we had been unable to follow you. Now, take your positions, lads.
Tom said nothing. I moved back to the cave mouth, then edged up to some rocks, so I was looking down at the group assembling in front of Tom. With the brilliant moonlight, I could see everything. Tom stood at the edge of the Chultun, on the narrow, sandy approach around its paved rim. The hunters could not even send missiles into the Umphalos without gaining more ground.
Let us by, Captain Tom. You need not die for this. The creature is ours.
This might be the last of them, Meisler. Just this once. Do a really brave thing. Turn and go. Let the creature be.
Why should I, when defeating you will be such easy work?
If you insist.
I do!
The tall African was stronger, the more skillful opponent. I could see Tom was not going to defeat him. I could not interfere. I could not. And yet, neither could I just stand there. Tom was alone but for me. He stumbled. I seized a stone. My hand did. My mind not even deciding. One of the hunters raised a bow, but before he could let loose an arrow, Tom and Meisler backed off from one another and looked up. We all did. We saw the huge, dark shape against the blue evening sky. Watched as the balloon settled above the stone towers and men dropped down ropes from the gondola. We heard their swords leave their scabbards. We saw them descend, while other dark shapes lined the sides of the basket and sent arrows down at the waiting hunters.
It's the bird club! Stop them!
At this, one of the hunters pulled off his own right arm. From the prosthetic sheath, he drew three laser batons and threw them in a practiced move to his nearby companion.
Burn that thing down! As for you, Captain Tom...
All of a sudden, The plane was filled with detonations and flashes of energy. I looked up. Highland priests surrounded us on the rocks above. Appearing out of nowhere, their laser batons striking Mishla's high-tech warriors before they even aimed their weapons. Tom and Mishla slid and lunged in the dust, Tom being driven ever backward around the edges of the Chortoon toward the cave of the Forgetti. The rest of the fighters stood, watching. The dark sword carriers from that greatest of infringements, the balloon. The eight remaining mercenaries, who dropped their laser batons rather than risk certain death. And the silent Talon priests, with their staves of power glinting in the moonlight. Further and further towards the cave, Tom retreated, back into the shadows of the final 10 meters. Mishla was grinning in triumph. And then...
What was that?
Sounds like your philosopher beast has taken the philosopher's way out.
The cave. It's empty.
Look. There. A scuffed patch of earth beside the stones. That must be where he jumped into the water.
That finishes it, Mishla. The cistern's deep, but you just may find the body. You have until midnight.
All right, let's... Come on, let's get busy.
The tribes have ordered the club to disband.
What? Because of the balloon?
Using it was a substantial breach of their law.
Oh, couldn't it be justified as payback?
Ah, if it weren't for the payback ethic, we would have incurred a much heavier penalty, believe me.
Oh, still, it's a shame.
Maybe not such a shame. No more hunters will be coming. After such a violation of both tribal and nation taboo, they'll be hunted themselves forever.
So, the Forgetti is safe now.
If it still exists. What do you think, Beth? Did our beast take its own life? Was he that determined to end the conflict?
No, Tom. You've told me again and again that the species is viable, inclined to life. I think the cave was empty. That a rock slide had been prearranged. That's what we heard.
Well, still, it came at an opportune moment. A second later, Mishla would have had me.
Well, Sir Dodo, what about my bird?
Your bird?
The bird in my name. What have you chosen for me?
Ah, well, I think you know already. Something special, naturally.
Yes.
Something provocative.
I'm listening.
With the implications of the phoenix, the first bird.
Archaeopteryx?
That's it. The Eos in Leosa, the Greek word for dawn.
As dawn again appeared, rosy-fingered.
The dawn bird, a creature in transition, a precursor. Phoenix is always regarded as the bird of change. It's a myth. Ah, but the dawn bird really existed. The pragmatist's phoenix. So you really think it was a rock fall, eh?
Yes. A decoy.
You're so certain. There's no one near the cave but Mishla, you, and me.
Well, it was rigged in advance.
Maybe. But who set it off just at the right moment?
Well, could be you did. Or Mishla.
Hidden tripwire or something?
Exactly.
You didn't find anything like that.
You weren't looking, were you? Besides, the Forgetti may be clever enough to have kept it well hidden.
No, I don't underestimate the Forgetti. Not anymore. Still, if it had occurred even a second or two later...
You were very nearly extinct, my Dodo.
So were you, Dawn Bird.
I saw him the next morning on the terrace of the hotel talking with the other members of the Bird Club, carefully keeping myself hidden, wondering why I had not taken his memory this time either, and what he thought, knowing it all. It's good that he knows, that someone knows. Then I returned to my other dark place, my secret room in the back streets of the Thailand Quarter. There I found a letter, propped up against my small icon.
Dear Beth,
having you in my life again, one more time, this dangerous time, makes me know, all over again, what human is. Come back to me now, just as you are. I cannot promise what will happen, but you need not go through this again, especially now with Misla gone. We can make a place for all of your kind. Finish properly what we have begun. We need you to help us. Think of what you do now, Beth. Please. Think of what you do now. Love. Tom.
I burned the letter in the votive flame, cancelling out the sharp, exquisite hurt, at least in part. The hurt that he did understand but could never completely know. Then I arranged a brief mnemonic display to remind me that I was a sometime journalist between Twilight Beach and Tyler. So there would be a next time. I recited the trigger word several times, in case I needed to know it all, to have something more than chance that might lead me back to Tom. Archaeopteryx. 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 When that was done, I sat on my bed, fretting, aching with need for him. Yes, forgetties are philosopher beasts indeed. I mean, you learn it every time. You give, you take, you lower your head to your arm. Slowly, purposefully, there is the tooth. The slightest prick is all it takes. The last words you cry are a broken whisper, a sigh of love. Dodo, mon petit dodo. Then you give yourself over to Lethe and all the sweet blessings of forgetfulness.
You have been listening to The Only Bird in Her Name by Terry Dowling. In the cast you heard Caitlin Hopkins as Beth, Christopher Tavori as Tom, and Peter Dennis as Misla.